From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody. Rob Cairns here. I'm the founder, CEO, and chief creator of Amazing Ideas at Stunning Digital Marketing. In today's podcast, I sit down with Ravi Jagapool, and we talk about his book on digital marketing. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation full of solid gold. Hey, all, Rob Cairns here. I'm here with Ravi Jagapool today, and we're going to talk about one of his books. How are you today, Ravi?
Doing great. How are you, Rob?
I'm doing good for a Monday as we record. It's been a busy week, so we'll see how that plays out. You wrote this really good book, which I've read actually twice now, believe it or not, called, and I'm going to throw some acronyms out there and get you to explain it. It's Dog Poo and DOSA. And what do those acronyms stand for?
So Dog Poo stands for Do Once, Get Paid Only Once. So DOGPOO. And yep. DOSA is DOSAA, stands for Do Once, Sell Again and Again. So yep. I created those acronyms to distinguish between once selling one-time products or doing things once and getting paid only once, like freelancing or some kind of a task or going to a job where you do something, you create something once and you only get paid once, versus creating something like a digital service or digital products, membership sites and online courses, and then creating a recurring revenue-based business so that you can get paid again and again.
Yeah, which is always the best way, because anybody who understands marketing knows that to have a reoccurring client is cheaper from a cost of acquisition than to acquire a new client, correct?
Exactly. So yeah, for first-time customers are really hard because you have to do a lot of marketing to get them in your funnel, and then you have to convert them, and you have to make sure they stay around and they pay you again. So, but once somebody is already in your system, they know the value of your product. Obviously, your product or service has to be really, really good for them to keep coming back. But if that's the case, then you're better off marketing to your existing customers than always trying to go in search of new customers. You have to do as well, but you can't focus all of your marketing only on finding new customers who only pay once, and then now you're back at square one the next month where you're now looking for new customers. If they don't come, then you don't get paid.
Yeah, so true. And this is, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's either your sixth or your seventh book you've written now.
Eighth book, yeah.
It is the eighth book. Okay, so you've written seven other ones. How did you decide to write eight books? And where does that knowledge and that background come from? Can you give us a little bit of the backstory before we move on?
Sure. So writing is one of my biggest superpowers, because mm-hmm. I have been a prolific writer for a very long time. And it also helps that I can type at a very fast speed, like 105 words per minute. And I learned typing in college when I was doing computer engineering. Or actually way back in high school, that's when I learned typing on a regular good old typewriter and learned the basics and stuff. And then as I got into computer school, it was a lot easier. And then over the years, I have refined my typing skills. And because I have the knowledge, obviously, to write well, you not only have to have, a decent hold over the language. You have to have decent language skills, which I was fortunate enough, because I, even though English was not my first language growing up in India, I still, loved my, I used to watch a lot of Hollywood movies with my dad, watch CNN, which was the only foreign channel available to us. And then, And then we used to watch a lot of talk shows, and that's when, you know, I got fascinated with the talk show format, which helped me launch a podcast, you know, many, many years later, which got me, I fell in love with podcasting and the audio format and the long form discussion formats. And then writing came because of reading a lot of books. And my father was also a writer himself in one of our native languages in India, in Canada. And so I might have the writer's gene in me. I don't know if that's true, but a writer's gene getting passed on. But maybe the love of writing was always there, and that helped me. And the more I learned and the more I wanted to share, and I wrote my first book in 2007. It took me about 3 to 4 years, I think, in total to write it, because I was writing a page a day, sometimes a page a week, because I had a full-time job. I was commuting to New York City. I lived in Austin in New York, and I had to take two trains, a metro train, and then two subway trains, and then a 10-minute walk to get to downtown New York, and then where I was working in different consulting jobs. And then at one point I worked for the city of New York. So while doing all that, I would, you know, I had nothing to do on the train. It was like a 45-50 minute train ride. So I'd pull out my laptop and I would start typing. And it was actually a blessing that I did not have Wi-Fi at the time. And even though, I did not know that I could get Wi-Fi card for the, you know, which I could use on the train, which actually turned out to be great for me, because if I had, probably I would have wasted time going online and websites and stuff, even though there was no Facebook at the time. So I used, I said, what's the best thing I can do offline for 50 minutes? And that's read a book, some technical book. I was still learning, coding and everything else. I was always learning coding. And I started typing up, and I said, you know what, I'm going to write my first book, because I thought it was very important to be perceived as an authority and an expert. A book is very, very helpful. It's one of the best business cards you can have in terms of being an author. And at the time, self-publishing was really becoming stronger, and the vanity publishing concept was slowly dying, that if you self-published, that you are a vanity publisher, that you just want to promote yourself kind of thing. So that Seth Godin and all these great thinkers and bloggers, they were starting to change how people thought about publishing. And, you know, I said, I'm going to write my first book. And after that, for nearly 10 years, I did not write another book, because I was super focused on my business. And then, you know, 2010, my wife and I, we both quit lucrative jobs in New York, and we moved to San Diego once we became full-time and got our green card and everything else. So, and then for many years, it was about the business and focusing on it. And then my wife started taking over the company, the technical aspects, the development and support and all those things. So that freed up a bunch of time for me. Then that's when I said, okay, let's branch out into newer things. I started coaching and consulting, and wanted to write more books, and started a podcast. This all around 2015.
There's a couple of things you said that really resonate with me. One is you were a coder. I don't know if you know, but I'll share, and many of my listeners know, I am an old-time COBOL programmer before I got into marketing and web stuff. So I was originally a PA by trade. The other thing you were talking about was when you started your podcast, you listened to talk radio. And it's funny when you say that, because that's what got me into podcasting originally. I was growing up, and I actually grew up in Montreal, not Toronto, where I am now. I was an avid AM radio listener for talk radio. So, you make the transition from AM radio to listening to podcasts and audiobooks. And then if you like that format, that's easy to start. And I really like the book journey. I mean, that's a long journey that you did that on your way into work. I mean, a lot of people now, a lot of these commuter trains actually have, and in Toronto we do, we have Wi-Fi on them. So needless to say, you know what I end up doing when I'm commuting, right? I work, but a different type of work. So when you, in your book, and you basically say right on the cover page, you have 67 proven techniques, hacks, ideas to help your business. What do you think is the most important idea in the book?
The most important idea is the title itself, right? Doc Puendosa, do not sell just one-time products, and sell, create a subscription-based business, because ultimately, you know, at someday you'll want to exit the business. And the first thing a prospective buyer wants to know, they don't care about how much money you made, you know, over the last 5 years, or how much money you made the last year or this month. They want to know how much money, if they buy your business, how much money they'll make next month, without having to do anything new, without having to bring in any new customers. And if your answer is, well, all of our customers have paid up, so if you buy our business starting next month, you're going to have to go out there and look for new customers, then you're not going to sell your business, or you're going to sell it for pennies on the dollar. So to increase the value of your business, you will have to have some recurring revenue in your business. You know, monthly run rate, annual run rate, that's what people look at when buying a new business. And then if you have a healthy monthly run rate, annual run rate, then you can get several multiples of that, depending on what kind of a business it is, what kind of external dependencies it has. Does it rely on, is it physical product, a digital product? How easily can it be delivered? Is there a lot of work in delivery? Do there have to be a lot of people who need to do the delivery, or can it be managed automatically? So all these things come into the picture, but the critical one is the run rate, how much recurring revenue you're getting. So that's probably the most important part. And then I go into, there's so many other aspects of digital marketing. I get into, like, you know, sell first, create later, which is you don't want to go off and create a product or service or a course that, you know, take 6 months, 8 months to create a new course, and then you find out you can't sell it, nobody wants it, right? You launch it and it's crickets. So instead of going off and spending all the time and then coming back to selling it, why don't you sell it first? So that'll give you an idea as to whether you have the right product or the right product market fit. Are you in touch with the right audience? Is your social network filled with people who are just friends and family who probably won't buy, or do you have prospective buyers on it? Are you connecting to the right community? So it allows you to validate your product, your audience, and so many other things, and your ability to sell, because now you have to put an offer together. Offer is not just the product, right? It's the whole package, from the heading to the subheads and the sales copy and the pricing table, the different options. So you put the whole, so it allows you to validate that. So that's one of the big things that a lot of people have said that they found very useful.
Yeah, I have a mentor who years ago, I took 10 years, I took some digital courses through, and he was very much of that belief. When you create a course, he'd say, if you're creating a 10-week course or 12-week course, don't worry about anything past the first week or the second week, because that will help you validate it and then create the content as you go if you have to the first time through. He'd say, don't invest the money in it until you actually have the buyers. And I tend to agree with that philosophy very much so. I also agree with the recurring revenue philosophy. I mean, in my business, I've got a prime part of my revenue is WordPress security care plans. And right now, I have, beyond all the consulting and everything else, I have over 150 websites on security care plans. And that's reoccurring revenue every month that comes in the door. And my renewal rates are like 90%. So you know, when you look at numbers like that and look at what you're talking about, Ravi, people need to really think about creating something that's reoccurring.
Right. And the offer has to, you know, you have to also have to keep the offers pretty simple, right? You don't want to confuse them with way too many options. Like your business model is so simple, right? Your primary thing is what for security. And then once you have launched that and once you have people coming in and signing up, now you can offer so many other products and services to them because now they're already a customer. They trust you. They probably give you access to their WordPress websites. And so now there's a different level of trust when somebody gives you access to their back end of their business website. So now you have the trust. So now you can say, hey, we offered this additional thing. So those are upsells. And you can always add on services later on. And that's another thing that I, one of the most useful chapters from my perspective is also a chapter called Go Deep, Then Wide, where I talk about you need to go deep first and focus on one vertical. And then you can branch out into several other areas and offer upsells and everything else, just like Google, you know, started with search and now they're, you know, from everywhere, from cars to space to everything else they want to do. But they always mastered the search first and then tried to go wide.
So true. And what people don't realize is if you can get that reoccurring revenue in place, it will take care of itself if you take care of your customers. And that's the important thing. I mean, we were talking in the pre-show, the cost per acquisition of an existing customer is way less than trying to acquire a new customer. And frankly, it's something the telecoms industry in Canada and the US just don't get. They're all out there trying to get new customers and offering them deals. Well, if they offered some of their, you know, existing customers some deals, maybe their profits would actually go up, not down, right?
Right, exactly.
One of my favorite chapters in the book was a chapter, chapter type that you talked about was ad revenue is not a reliable business model. And I so love that statement. And from somebody that's run a lot of pay-per-click ads for clients over the years, I get that. Do you want to touch on that a little bit and where you, why that's important?
Sure. So that came out of you know, me being deeply connected in the podcasting industry, where so many podcasters, their holy grail is to build a large audience and then be able to get sponsors. And it's the same with a lot of bloggers. It's gone down now, but earlier in the blogging years, the big deal was, you know, create a blog that gets a lot of traffic and then sell AdSense ads. And I talked about, you know, how I had one, you know, Baby Names website where I was making consistently $1,500 from AdSense, but it never cracked that thing. And it wasn't, and then it started going down and up and very unreliable. And same thing with podcast sponsors. Because when your revenue model is sponsorship, that means your product is your audience's attention. And that is a very difficult thing to create, you know, for the average person. Obviously, if you're like a Joe Rogan or a celebrity who already has a massive audience and you already have an audience in a different platform like Tim Ferriss, he podcasting was not the first thing he did. He was a very prolific and popular and New York bestselling writer who had written several books, who had been building an email list for a long time. He had a phenomenal blog, and he could leverage that into a massive podcast listenership. And then the sponsors come knocking. Then you can dictate your terms, or even if you have 100,000 or million user listeners, then it's a lot easier to leverage that kind of attention. And the same issue with donations as well. Right, relying on donations or ads is a very difficult. It can be a supplemental stream of revenue, but it cannot be your main business. And if you're saying, you know, I'm going to start a blog and I'm going to make money off of it using ads, now then you're in trouble because it's not as easy, and you'll have to have hundreds of thousands or millions of views or page loads or, you know, CPMs, impressions, and same thing with the podcast listenership. Even if you manage to grow your listenership to 5,000 or 10,000 people, which is really hard for the average person, because, you know, it takes many, sometimes 1 to 2 years for a podcast to take off, especially if you don't already have an existing audience, an existing email list that you can blast to and bring people over from another platform, like you have an Instagram following or massive Twitter following. If you don't have an existing audience, starting with, you know, I'm going to build an audience and then I'm going to charge for sponsorship is a very, very hard road to travel.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, most people don't understand. And even doing stuff like doing the podcast in the first place, like the average podcaster never gets past like 10 or 11 episodes, because most people who get into that model don't understand how much work they look in and say, oh, Rob and Ravi will jump on a call, they'll record in 30 minutes, they'll be done. That's the end of it. And every time somebody says that to me, I shake my head at them and say, really? You know, it's right. There's work. I mean, one of the things I do is I don't do a lot of editing in the conversation with a guest on a podcast, but I have to add trailers. I have to add headers. Before the podcast, I do some research. I look at websites. I figure out where I'd like the conversation to go. You know, there's a lot of work. I mean, you know, in a 45-minute podcast episode, I would bet you it takes me probably 4 to 5 hours by the time I'm done, Ravi. And most people, and you get that being a podcaster. I think podcasting, by the way, is a great lead generation tool, but I would agree with you, running on ad revenue alone is not the way to go personally. In that discussion twice, and you were talking about Tim Ferriss, who I know very well. I've read most of Tim's books and I'm an avid podcast listener of Tim's. You talked about his large email list. I take it, like me, you strongly believe in the email list and how you can work your email list?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're going to build any kind of audience, the number one platform you should focus on is building an email list.
Yep.
Because social media platforms, you never know what's going to happen. You never know. I see, you know, people posting all the time on social media, whether it's on Facebook or YouTube creators getting banned, or one of the videos getting banned because of some vague copyright thing issue, or somebody complained, or you're always building you're putting your content on somebody else's platform, and these companies, they have the right to control your content, and you never know what silly thing might cause your content to go down. You might lose your account, your account may get suspended, your channel might get suspended, your Twitter account you could get suspended, Facebook same thing. So you don't know what how your content is, how long it is going to stay on these platforms. So your audience also, again, when you're creating a YouTube video, I've seen a lot of YouTube creators. Obviously, they have great content, the biggest ones, but there is so much focus on how long should the video be, right? If I create too short of a video, will it affect my playing time? Will it affect my watch time? Will it affect my skip time? They're more focused on worrying about Google's algorithms and Facebook algorithms and Google search engine and Twitter, what is going to show my tweets to everybody, because I have at this point almost 700 Twitter users, but every time I post, you know, I'm not getting 700 views on that, because not everybody who, you know, same thing with Facebook. If I post a video, I have almost close to 5,000 friends on Facebook, right? It doesn't, but Facebook is not going to show it unless it's a controversial thing or some kind of thing that generates a lot of anger or frustration or whatever it is. So if you're constantly having to play the algorithm game, then you're not putting out your best content. And that's where email comes. Email list is so valuable because if the, obviously you cannot control whether everybody will open your email, but for the most part, email delivery is really, really good. So if somebody has actually signed up, and you have to follow some of the tricks to get them to whitelist you or reply back to you, you have to create some engagement. But once the email servers know that you're not spamming them, then you get a very high deliverability. And then whether they open it is up to your copywriting skills of writing a great subject line and then how you drag them in. So those are all marketing and copywriting tactics. But for the most part, if you have a 1,000-person email list, you can be reasonably certain that most of them will get your email. And then from there, it's up to you to get them to open it and read what's inside and get them to click. But you can at least know that what you see is what you get in terms of your audience.
I would agree with you. I'll share with you a story. We talk about algorithms changing and rules changing. I have been in the Facebook black hole for 8 months. So anything I post off my business domain, and listeners to the show or those who follow me on Twitter will know this, gets rejected by Facebook. Supposedly, my marketing site does not meet community standards. And that has been going on for months. So the game I play to get around it is when I post a podcast, Castos is my podcast host. I actually post the Castos link, not the web link, because to get around it. And that's the problem with dealing with what we call rented land websites. The only two things you really own in this business is one is your website and two is your email list. So I would suggest strongly to anybody, as you said, concentrate on that email list. What's your favorite email list platform, Ravi, since we're talking about it?
I signed up for AWeber back in 2000-something, so early 2000s, and I've been with them ever since. They've worked out great for me. I've tried a couple of, once in the meantime in the early 2010s, but AWeber works fine for me. There's ConvertKit, there's Drip, there's so many different email platforms, and MailChimp recently got a huge... they sold and made a lot of money. Pick one and go. But I would not recommend MailChimp because they always had a policy, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that, you cannot promote affiliate links and stuff like that. So in the beginning, a lot of people were complaining that they could not, if you're an entrepreneur. But now they might have changed those rules.
Yeah, MailChimp was actually bought by a Canadian company called Intuit. And they were bought, I believe the price, if I recall, was $6 billion US, which is interesting. The second biggest buy that Intuit's made, their previous biggest buy was a company called Credit Karma out of the States. They paid $3 billion for. And they're actually based out of Calgary, Alberta. They're 100% Canadian. And I'm still trying to figure out that buy, but I think I've got my head wrapped around it finally. But I personally am a ConvertKit user. I have been for a while. But choose the platform that works the best for you. I think that's the really key. And honestly, just do it and try it. That's the important thing, right? So
exactly. The key is to build a list. You can always move your list to a different, if you find a fancy new email service provider who supposedly has better deliverability or whatever it is, more features, you can always move. Just like I say, start your podcast. Doesn't matter if it's on Anchor. You can always move your RSS feed. You can redirect it to a paid host like Libsyn or Podbean. People spend way too much time trying to get the tools and the platform and everything perfect, and they procrastinate and they just go on, they go for months or years just in research mode. And I say, just get started with whatever it is. You could collect emails on a spreadsheet. Who cares? If you can, as long as you have a way to send out the emails, it doesn't matter if you have a self-hosted email or software, but obviously you don't want to do that. But I'm saying, keep it minimal, MVP for everything.
I agree with you because, we talk about the podcast. I started on Anchor and I actually moved to Castos after that, and I personally haven't been happier. It's not the platform for everybody, but it's just to start and figure out what works for you and what doesn't. And it's funny how you mentioned MVP, because I was going to segue into that. And I think most people get into trouble, and I've been guilty of it in past life, and I'm not as bad anymore. They're perfectionists, and they want everything 100% right, and then they wonder why they don't make any money.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and they kind of don't realize that a product doesn't have to be 100%. And I'm going to give a good example that's going on in the wild right now is Windows 11 by Microsoft. That product, as far as I'm concerned, has some issues, but Microsoft has thrown it out there and said, here it is. You know, if you want it, go get it. And the reason they've done that is because they recognize that nothing is ever 100% before you do it. Because if you keep going for 100%, as far as I'm concerned, you will never launch anything as long as you live.
Right. The same thing goes for, you know, podcasters also. A lot of newbie podcasters will hoard 5, 7, 10 episodes. They won't release it. They won't get feedback. And then they release it, and then they find so many issues with it. Now they have to go back and fix 10 episodes, which will be really hard to do. Instead, if you just launch with one episode, which is a very controversial thing that I've been, you know, promoting for a long time, because a lot of so-called gurus were promoting, you know, launch 7 episodes together so that you will get a lot of juice in the search and stuff. Nothing matters, because people, when they subscribe, only the latest episode gets downloaded automatically. So just launch with one, get feedback, get listener feedback, ask people for feedback. That's the most important thing, whether it's the first episode of a podcast or first video, whatever it is. And same thing with writing a Kindle book as well. You know, there's so many ways to just start. You just open up Google Docs and start writing today. You don't have to wait for anything fancy.
No, it's so true. And you know, use the podcast example. And the other thing to do is, while you're doing any of this marketing stuff, is build your community and spend time in the community that you serve and be helpful to people. Like, people don't, I think people don't get that if you be helpful, and then when you reach out to somebody and say, hey, you know, I think you'd be a really great podcast guest. And I'll give you an example. I just recently did an interview with Brian Gardner. Brian's somebody who's well-known in the WordPress space, founded Studio Press, works for WP Engine. I mean, but the thing is, the more you give back, the more approachable people are. And frankly, people buy and choose to work with the people they like, not for the technology and not for the information.
Right, exactly.
You know, things have changed. So I have to ask you the question. You've written 8 books. Are you working on a 9th?
No, not right now.
No.
the eighth book is, I position it in such a way that a lot of the new tactics and stuff that that I come up with, I could probably roll it into this one, or I can wait for another 2 years and package another, you know, 20, 30, 40 tips and hacks and everything else, and come out with a second version or second edition, part 2 kind of thing.
Yeah, it's funny. I had to ask that question because in my circle, Ravi, I've got a number of old-time journalists and old-time reporters and current reporters. And the thing about writers is writers never die. They never retire. They just keep writing.
I'm probably going to come up with a few other different ideas. I already have something going on in my head, but I'm going to take a few months off because, like we were talking about in the pre-call, now that the pandemic is getting better and people are getting back to work, and my coaching business has started booming. So now I have to take care of my clients and so a lot of other things going on. But I will definitely, you know, but I don't stop writing. Even though I might not come out with a book in the next 6 months, I would have probably ended up writing and podcasting and YouTubing and creating so much content. I'm creating so much content on a day-to-day basis. on different platforms that, you know, I make a note of everything. Everything is in a notepad. All I have to do is just repurpose it, and I can have a book, you know, ready to go in like within a week.
Yeah. If somebody wants to get a hold of you or find out where to find your books, where's the best way, Ravi?
My website is subscribeme.fm. That's my podcast name as well. If you want to check out my podcast, just search for subscribeme.fm as one word in your podcast app. And if you go to subscribeme.fm, then you'll find all the details about me, my books, my coaching, consulting, all my Hall of Fame products, services, everything is there. And my email is Ravi, that's R-A-V as in Victor I, at subscribeme.fm.
Thanks for your time, Ravi. Have an amazing day.
Thank you so much, Rob. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. A very special thank you to Ravi for joining me on this week's podcast. Be sure to pick up his latest book. Thank you for listening to this edition of the SDM Show. The SDM Show is brought to you by Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing. For more information about Rob Cairns and Stunning Digital Marketing, go to stunningdigitalmarketing.info. From here, you can connect to us on social media, go to our website, and even go to the podcast to subscribe. This podcast is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much. Keep your feet on the ground. Keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed.